The next case on the docket this morning is case number 2017-297, Greenway, Ohio, Inc. v. Cuyahoga County Board of Revision. Representing the appellant cross-appellee, Mr. Ray.
Good morning. Your Honor, may it please the court. My name is Nicholas Ray of Vorey, Sater, Seymour, and Pease, and along with my co-counsel from the Chilcote Law Firm, we represent the appellant in this case. Your Honor, this case is not a case of first impression, but rather a failure of the BTA members to properly apply the decisions of this court, something the court has been critical of the board members of in the past, as it should be in this case. In this case, the complaint was initiated with the Cuyahoga County Board of Revision by a property manager on behalf of the property owner. Mr. Sweeney, the CEO of the property manager, properly completed the DTE-1 and made clear that he was filing as the property manager. After completing and filing the form, and before the case went forward to hearing at the Board of Revision, Mr. Sweeney and property owner retained legal counsel for the property owner in this case. After hearing arguments about jurisdiction at the BOR, the BOR no changed the value and an appeal to the BTA was taken. In response to a renewed attempt by the BOE to have the case dismissed, the owner provided the affidavit of Mr. Sweeney, further establishing the relationship between property income advisors and the property owner. Although the BOE objected to this affidavit, the BTA accepted it. It is clear that property income advisors is the property manager, and there is a fiduciary relationship between the parties. Furthermore, the BTA, although it's wrong in its legal reasoning, also made clear that they considered property income advisors to be the property manager. The BTA, in the second paragraph of its decision in this case, made clear that it was making a decision on an unauthorized practice of law issue and then applied the Vistula case out of Lucas County because it involved the situation where it was a property manager that was filing the complaint. All of the evidence in this case supports the fact that they were the property manager. The errors in the BTA's decision in this case are legal ones. The BTA misapplied the court's holding in Vistula and failed to properly apply the court's other decisions in Dayton Supply and Tool, Columbus City Schools, and Marysville. These four cases, Your Honor, form the basis of the court's relatively recent jurisprudence as it relates to this issue. Vistula made clear that a property manager that held a fiduciary agency relationship with the property owner was authorized to initiate a complaint on behalf of the property owner. Dayton Supply and Tool, which was actually decided before Vistula, came before this court on the question of whether an officer could initiate a complaint. And the court held that yes, an officer could perform the ministerial task of filing the complaint. The ministerial task was not considered the practice of law. And as long as the officer did not engage in activities such as presenting or cross-examining witnesses or making legal argument, that the filing of the complaint by the officer was allowed. In this case, all that Mr. Sweeney did was the ministerial task of filing the complaint. Counsel was retained and performed the legal duties from that part forward.
But an officer is authorized by the statute to file a complaint, correct? Is a property manager authorized by a statute?
No, property manager is not specifically listed, Your Honor, but this court's been clear that the listing there is not an exhaustive list. In Vistula, the court found that the property manager, because of the agency fiduciary relationship that existed, was authorized to initiate the complaint on behalf of the property owner. The question then becomes—
But in Vistula, there was an attorney who filed the complaint.
That's true, and in Marysville there was, in Vistula there was. This court makes clear, however, in the Marysville decision in paragraph 24, that Vistula was not a case that was decided or considered unauthorized practice of law issues. To be sure, there was an attorney that was involved there, but the court in Marysville in paragraph 24 makes clear the filing was fine by the property manager. And so there's a two-part analysis. That property manager filing was fine. They go on to then say because there was an attorney involved, we didn't reach the issue of whether an attorney was necessary. The BTA and opposing counsel would have this court create a special class of filers, that somehow property managers are different than every other filer of a complaint in the state of Ohio. This court has said, again, in Dayton Supply and Tool, that officers are fine. In the Columbus City School cases, that spouses are fine. In the Marysville case, that salaried employees are fine. But for some reason, property managers are a different class, that when a property manager files, it somehow is the practice of law, when in all these other cases, the ministerial task of filing the complaint is not, and therefore non-attorneys can file. That reasoning doesn't hold up to logic. It's the question of, first, are they authorized to file? Yes, property manager is authorized to file on behalf of the property owner. Vistula made that clear. Then, secondly, who can attest to the complaint? Again, we're talking about a ministerial task of filing the complaint. And who can attest to it? An officer is fine by this court. Spouse is fine. Salaried employee is fine. And the court has been clear it's not an exhaustive list. They don't have to be listed there. Otherwise, the property manager in Vistula would not have been an authorized party to initiate the complaint, even if it was signed by an attorney.
What case law are you referring to that that's not an exhaustive list that the statute sets forth for the filing of a complaint?
Your Honor, I'm drawing an immediate blank on that. I will address that in when I come back up for rebuttal. The Columbus City School case made clear, and again, that might be it as I'm trying to keep all these cases straight, but I'll verify that for you, that there was really a two-part analysis in determining whether a spouse was allowed to file. And the first was whether the legislative decision to authorize the filing of a complaint on behalf of the owner, if the person is so authorized by virtue, I'm sorry, that's second. The first was, would it substantially interfere with this court's ability to regulate the practice of law? And the court said, no, does not. And secondly, that if by virtue of the relationship, there's a sufficient relationship between the parties to allow them to be held accountable by the owner. That's the fiduciary test. That's the test that they have met in this case. The Marysville case involved then a situation, although it was a salaried employee, where we also have the filing party being authorized by law, but not being the property owner. So we have an owner of property in the county initiating complaints against property that it does not own, and they're filed by a salaried employee. Much like the case here, this court has said a property manager is authorized to file a complaint. In Marysville, they're authorized by statute. In our case, they're authorized by the case law and the decisions of this court to file the complaint. The filing by the salaried employee then was allowed in Marysville. Filing in this case by an officer follows that same logic and analysis. As I noted, the other significant part of Marysville is paragraph 24. The court was very specific in paragraph 24, and the quote that they provided was that in paragraph 24, discussing the Vistula decision, this court said, we confronted the issue whether a contractor could act as an agent of the property owner and held that it could. That's the first part. They've met it. We specifically noted, however, that the issue of the unauthorized practice of law, which was at the heart of the case in Marysville and at the heart of the case here, did not arise because a lawyer, the contractor's lawyer, had been involved in preparing and filing the complaint. The Vistula court did not raise the issue, did not get there. The BTA has now taken the position that in somehow property managers are a special class, that they're different, that an owner of property in the county can have a salaried employee file a complaint against properties they don't even own. But an officer, CEO of the property manager, another entity authorized to file the complaint, is somehow different. This court's been clear. The filing of the complaint is a ministerial task. It does not rise to the level of the practice of law. Mr. Sweeney did not perform any legal services in this case. Your Honor, as I noted in my opening, this is not a case of first impression. The court has already confirmed that a property manager can file on behalf of the owner. Furthermore, Vistula did not create a special requirement for property managers different than every other property owner filer in the state of Ohio. The decision of this court has been clear that the filing of the complaint is not the practice of law, and that officers, spouses, salaried employees, and others are included in the statute, are authorized to initiate the complaint.
Well, didn't Sharon Village specifically say that the filing of the complaint is the practice of law?
The court did in Sharon Village, Your Honor, and again, what we have then is a legislative response to Sharon Village, and that's really this recent lounge, this quartet of cases that we're discussing really arises from the legislature's response to Sharon Village. So those provisions were a response to Sharon Village. There was kind of much discussion and hand-wringing over the question of whether or not that was constitutional, whether or not this particular section was an overstep by the legislature, because it's this court's role to regulate what is the practice of law and determine what is the practice of law. There was an appellate district along the way that had determined it was unconstitutional, which is why, as Dayton Supply and Tool comes up before this court, really the first case where the court has the opportunity to analyze those changes. And then we see that follow-up with spouses and salaried employees to say, is there sufficient? Do they have this relationship? And we see the court in Columbus really then kind of finally setting out the test to say, listen, we've looked at it. Does it infringe upon our role in overseeing the practice of law? No, because we've concluded the filing of the complaint itself is a ministerial task. Then, is there a relationship there to allow to make sure no harm is done, that there's a fiduciary relationship? Yes, there is. So Sharon Village was decided in 1999, I believe. We've had a legislative response, and we've had a series of decisions of this court since that time. Which have found that the task of filing the complaint is allowed under this version of the statute, and the legislature has the ability with these statutorily created bodies to allow for that to happen. Your Honor, in this case, the case needs to be remanded back. The BTA's application of Vistula is contrary to this court's own discussion in the Marysville case. It should be remanded back with instructions that in jurisdiction was properly invoked and that there should be a merit hearing scheduled in this case. Thank you. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Mr. Greenfield for the County Appellees and Cross Appellants.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please this honorable Supreme Court. My name is Mark Greenfield. I'm an assistant prosecuting attorney in Cuyahoga County. I'm here today on behalf of my client, Appalese County Board of Revision and the county fiscal officer. And I'm gonna present for a few moments or a few minutes, and then I'm gonna reserve or cede the remaining portions of my time to Mr. Hinkle, who is counsel for the Board of Education of the City School District for Orange. I'm asking this court to affirm the decision of the BTA, in which the BTA remanded the appeal to the County Board of Revisions with instructions to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction. The BTA correctly determined that there was no jurisdiction. As recently, and it seems a long time ago in the context of these pronouncements, Sharon Village, 1997 versus Licking County, the court held that the preparation and filing of a tax complaint, is the practice of law. And even though there was the so-called anti-Sharon Village legislation, that has continued to be the holding of this court. 57-15-19 was in fact amended to allow certain specified persons to file a complaint, And the statute remains, was then, and remains the jurisdictional gateway for jurisdiction. When a statute allows you to do something, whether it's an appeal or a complaint, compliance with the statute is absolutely necessary, or there is no jurisdiction. Absent from the additional specified parties that were listed in the amended statute, property managers, tax managers, there were 7 or 8 or 9 or 10, maybe a few more than that put in the statute, property managers and tax managers, or any other classification property advisors could possibly fit into or don't, is not in the statute. More recently, following the Supreme Court's decision in Columbus, school board, known as the Novak case, the marriage case, in the court in Marysville Exempted School District, the 2013 case, promulgated a three-principle test. Each provision, to be clear about the statute, the court has said in both Toledo and Marysville, and I think probably in some of the other cases, that the list in the amended 57-15-19 is a list of persons who can file without retaining counsel. And if you're not in that list, then you need counsel. And if you're not on the list, I don't even know how you get here. Each provision, the three-principle test, each provision, all or nothing, not the former as applied, multi-factor test. The court will give deference to the General Assembly. This is an important point. The Supreme Court, via the Constitution, retains the authority and the right to regulate the practice of law. So the question becomes, when somebody like Greenway files without an attorney, is it the unauthorized practice of law? Toledo Public Schools, where Vistula was the manager, they had an attorney. And that's a very important distinction. Because as the court said, in both Toledo and in Marysville, the amended statute is a list of persons, specified categories, provisions, as the court has called it over the years in different cases, of persons who can file a complaint without an attorney. It's the practice of law. It simply wouldn't be then the unauthorized practice of law, as this court has said again and again. So the court will give deference to the General Assembly. There's a proclamation or promulgation provided that any provision does not substantially interfere with the practice of law. They've done it in three instances. As the court said in a footnote in both Toledo, and they said it in the body of the decision in Marysville, it's provision by provision. It remains a live issue as to any provision that has not been brought before the court. Lastly, the third principle is that the person filing the complaint must be held accountable, have a relationship that can be held accountable to the person on behalf of whom they're filing, without necessarily saying that property advisors could or couldn't. It's something that they, as the party claiming to have jurisdiction, when jurisdiction has been challenged, they have the burden, the duty to come forward with facts that support jurisdiction. And in this instance, they haven't done it specifically with respect to the fact that they're not named in the statute. And I would ask this court to affirm the BTA's decision. And I cede the remaining portions of my time to counsel for the school board. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greenfield. Mr. Hinkle, on behalf of the Orange City School District Board of Education.
Thank you. May it please the court, Kevin Hinkle from the law firm of Kadish Hinkle and Weibel on behalf of the Orange City School District Board of Education. The position espoused by appellant would require this court to reverse Sharon Village. Sharon Village held that the filing of a complaint by a non-attorney tax manager was the practice of law, and that was in 1997. As you move forward from that, we then get to House Bill 694 that enacted the amendment to 5715-19A1, and that allowed specified persons to file valuation complaints without the aid of an attorney. So that was the narrow amendment. At the time that amendment was adopted, that a tax manager had filed that complaint. When the General Assembly considered the amendment, it goes on in many of these cases and says there was a specified list of persons who's excluded from that. There's no mention of property managers. There's no mention of tax consultants or tax managers. Certainly, as this court has held in a paragraph caption, the anti-Sharon Village legislation, as it discussed the amendment, certainly that could have been done by the General Assembly. Appellant is asking this court to usurp the responsibility of the General Assembly for legislating laws. They chose not to put it in. This court held it's the practice of law. So they have to, one, reverse Sharon Village, and two, take over the legislative function of the General Assembly. A couple of facts here that, so the BTA did mention in its decision that the term property manager, and that is in that decision. However, as to what is in evidence is another issue. What's in evidence at the Board of Revision is a letter of authorization, which references that it authorizes, the owner authorizes the tax management company to file complaints. There is no management agreement at all in evidence. There's a reference in a brief by appellant to an oral management agreement, but that was never part of evidence. There's an affidavit that's referenced and has been referenced in this testimony. That affidavit was attached to a reply brief by appellant to the Board of Education's motion to dismiss. There's no record that was ever admitted into evidence. It's an affidavit, it's hearsay, it was attached to a brief. The BTA never opened up a hearing for evidence. Now, in full disclosure to this board, I would point out that the management agreement in one of these cases that we're going to talk, that I talk about, I believe it's the Vistula case, that management agreement referenced in the Vistula case, our record indicated that was attached to a reply brief. It was referenced in that BTA opinion, in full disclosure. However, in this case, it's the same thing, but the BTA, they never admitted that. There's nothing in the record that shows that was admitted as part of the record. So back to what the appellant is asking to do. So one is reverse Sharon Village. Secondly is to go to the Dayton case, the 2006 case. In that case, it says, quote, unlike the third-party agent in Sharon Village, corporate officers have a fiduciary duty to the corporation. So that is part of the analysis that this court did with respect to Dayton when they looked at, here's the amendment that the General Assembly adopted. Now we're going to look at corporate officer, and that's specifically in the statute, and we still end up dealing with, we found a fiduciary duty with corporate officers. And nonetheless, they state it's unlike the third-party management company in Sharon Village. Then we discuss the Columbus case, which is the 2012 case. So the 2012 Columbus case, that went and said, we're going to do an all or nothing approach. In Dayton, they had done the multi-factor test, and they said, we're not doing that anymore. And they said, we're going to do all or nothing. And they stated that, quote, litigants and agencies should be able to rely on statute at all times, or alternatively, no, they may never rely on it. And so that's where we went to all or nothing. We're being asked now to talk about fiduciary obligations, an expansion of the statute, longstanding relationships, and even without the presence of a written management agreement, and not even proof of an oral management agreement. That was never raised except in a brief. So also in Columbus, and it's stated in many of the cases, it states that 5715-19A1 sets forth a few relationships that tend to involve ongoing relationships between a filer and owner. There's no evidence here. The affidavit states there's an ongoing relationship. What we have is a letter of authorization that's in the record. Next is the Toledo case. In the Toledo case, and also known as Vistula. And so in that one is where we deal with the quote, which is what I refer to as the gateway quote. It is now well settled that the language of 5715.19A establishes the jurisdictional gateway to obtaining review by the boards of revisions. Review by boards of the revisions. That's a complaint. Quote, it authorizes complaints from particular actions of the county auditor, and then it specifies the persons or entities may file such a complaint. Now, it says there, specify, not specify or imply. The code sections is the term specifies, and that's what is held by this court. So what we're stating here is it no longer, A1 as adopted is no longer the gateway. A1 as interpreted by this court to insert property manager or tax consultant is now part of the gateway. Second quote from Toledo, which would have to be reversed, is that in Toledo it says that 5719 was only intended to widen the pool by specifying that certain non-lawyers may file on behalf of an owner in spite of considerations relating to the unauthorized practice of law. Whenever a non-lawyer files on behalf of an owner, the question of practice of law arises, which has to be resolved in light of the statute and court precedent. So that holding of Toledo would need to be overruled. Maryville is the case where they reference the anti-Sharon Village legislation, which is the caption of a paragraph of discussion. It also has in there that there are certain specified persons who can proceed without an attorney. And again, I highlight the word specified. Marysville also goes forth and requotes the all or nothing test from the Columbus case, and it also quotes the litigants are entitled to rely on the statute. So the irony of this is that we have Sharon Village, where the court in 1996 says we govern the practice of law, and in each of these cases where there were specified people named, employees, spouses, corporate officers, the court then went and looked at could they go ahead and do it and evaluated practice of law in those specific instances, even though they were within the statute. So what's being asked of the court now is to them insert property manager or tax consultant into 5719A1. That's number one. And two is to somewhat abdicate the practice of law guidance to the General Assembly, because if we're going to put property manager in here, and we don't believe that this court has said that that preparation of a complaint is no longer the practice of law. They've analyzed certain instances, footnote 6 in I believe it's the Toledo case, thank you. I apologize for that, thank you. States that on each case, we have to look at the practice of law on each case as it comes through 5719. And then lastly, this concept is of it deals in the Vistula case in the concept of an agent, that what Vistula stands for, and the quote that was listed there is that they analyzed in Vistula the management agreement, and they stated that the complaint implied that they were a manager, and then they subsequently proved it by producing a management agreement. That established their agency. Their agency then allowed them to hire an attorney who came forward and prepared a complaint and proceeded with the complaint. That they had to have an agency established in order to put an attorney in, to put the attorney in place. You couldn't have authority to engage the attorney to do that, to present it. What's being asked here is if we go and say that 5715-19 is not an exhaustive list, because anybody that becomes an agent can then go file without an attorney, which happened here, is that as an owner, can I go ahead and hire a property tax consultant, tell them to file a complaint and go forward? No, I can't. I as the owner can file that. But what's being asked of the court is that we take the agency, and as long as somebody in that specified list hires an agent, a tax consultant, and says, that's my agent, are they then all can go ahead, file a complaint, proceed forward as was done in this case? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ray, you have 2 minutes and 36 seconds remaining.
Thank you, Your Honor. And to be clear, Mr. Hinkle gives you part of the quote from Vistula, and that's exactly the part that he leaves out, is the idea of the non-exhaustive list. So at paragraph 30 of the Vistula decision, the court says, we note that House Bill 694's list of persons is not intended to be a restriction on those who may file a valuation complaint on behalf of an owner. Instead, it is only intended to widen the pool by specifying certain non-lawyers who may file on behalf of an owner in spite of considerations regarding the unauthorized practice of law. So the idea that the property manager cannot file in this case is settled law. Counsel would have to try to throw this all together in one bucket, and it's not in one bucket, Your Honor. There's a question initially, can a property manager file on behalf of the property owner? Yes, they can. There was an indication on the face of the complaint that they were the property manager. There's a letter of authorization that was provided at the Board of Revision. There's an affidavit that was provided as part of, as Mr. Hinkle notes, there was no hearing at the BTA in this case. The court in Conley Construction in the Marysville case makes a point of saying, boy, we're stuck here with a record without much detail. We're missing a hearing or an affidavit. And the court specifically calls out upon the parties to provide more information. Where there's not a hearing, Your Honor, the affidavit takes the place. We're here on a motion to dismiss. We have to look at those facts and consider those facts that are in the record and available before that extreme action of dismissing a case is taken. There's a merit hearing that can be had in this case, that should be had in this case. And if there are questions there, they certainly can be addressed. Counsel is focused and continues to be focused on Sharon Village. Conley Construction, the Marysville case, talks about the anti-Sharon Village legislation. We all agree that legislation was intended to address Sharon Village, to address the dismissal of cases that happened as a result of the Sharon Village decision. And this court has allowed all of these parties. The property owner, property manager is allowed to file on behalf of the owner. The BTA analyzed this case as they were the property manager. The only evidence in the record establishes that they property manager. The question then becomes, who attests to the complaint at the bottom? We have the CEO of the property manager signing the complaint here. They performed the task of doing so. And as a property manager authorized under Vistula, the court doesn't have to overturn anything, doesn't have to overturn any other decisions. It just has to follow what it's already decided. And that is a property manager can file and the party attesting to the complaint can be an officer. In this case, the CEO does not engage in the unauthorized practice of law. This case needs to be remanded back. Jurisdiction was properly invoked, and a hearing on the merits is appropriate in this case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of the decision. Thank you.